Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your reoccurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
To gain the supernatural powers needed to shift shape to animal forms, the witch must do something horrible, like kill a close family friend and preferably a sibling. These are spiritual beings who now walk the plains basically perpetually, and they're essentially a form of spiritual terrorism. This circular area on the jaw where the hide and the tissue are just completely gone, and it exposes the bone with a very sharp sort of cauterized outline. And there's very little blood on the ground, far less than you'd expect from an animal that size. And not just any wolf, this thing is huge. They said horse shoulder high, with a massive head and thick fur that looks strangely matted.
Opens the door and his body opens the door. He goes right through the walls. Okay, he's up in like in the ceiling, you know, and the body opens the door, closes it, the body walks around to his desk, and as soon as the body sat in the chair, he slammed into his body.
You have entered the 21st century dystopian portal. Welcome to confusion. Welcome to question. And welcome to clarity. The life is in the blood.
Welcome back to the 21CD podcast. As always, it's your ghost, John. All my links are in the descriptions to every video. You'll find my Buy Me a Coffee there if you like me enough to take me on a coffee date, my Instagram, my Spotify, and my audio-only platforms if you're not in the position to watch video right now. If you like this type of content, be sure to share it with your friends. Use those hype points on YouTube. Hit the little bell to stay notified. Give me that 5-star on Spotify. And of course, like and follow. In the northeastern corner of Utah, where the desert breaks into these rust-red ridges and cottonwood groves, lies a 512-acre patch of land that behaves as if the rules are different there. Skinwalker Ranch is fenced and posted now, and it's guarded like some kind of military site, but Long before television crews, security cameras, and Pentagon interest, Native elders, homesteaders, and later ranch families were already talking about the same thing. Something conscious appears to move through that basin, and it doesn't seem to be merely human. If you strip away the TV cameras and the Pentagon acronyms, the story of Skinwalker Ranch starts with a very old, very ugly borderland. It's a place where two indigenous worlds collided under Spanish and then later American pressure, where slavery, betrayal, and forced marches rewired the spiritual circuitry of the land long before anybody put up a no trespassing sign. Skinwalker Ranch sits along the edge of the Uintah and Ouray Reservation in the Uintah Basin of northeastern Utah, the home ground of the Uintah Band of the Northern Ute, who were in that basin before the other Ute bands were pushed there from Colorado, and that's a bit of a nightmare story all in its own. On the other side of that larger Four Corners region sits the Diné, the Navajo, with their own very different religious system, including something Anglos now obsess over called the Yi Naldalushi. In Navajo, Yi Naldalushi is usually translated as "with it he goes on all fours," a phrase pointing to someone who takes animal shape. In English, we collapse that into skinwalker, but that word is a blunt instrument for what Navajo people are actually describing. A skinwalker is not a random monster lurking in the sagebrush. It's a witch wielding the power of evil for malicious intent almost solely. They follow the witchery way and are believed to use human corpses to achieve their aims. They may use human bones to make tools or use parts of the bodies to make potions to curse, hurt, or kill others. Most witches are males, but they can also be females. The initiation rite to become a skinwalker is usually conducted by a secret group. To gain the supernatural powers needed to shift shape to animal forms, the witch must do something horrible, like kill a close family friend, and preferably a sibling. Skinwalkers usually appear as bears, cougars, coyotes, dogs, foxes, or wolves, but they can pretty much take any animal's shape. They choose their shape based on the abilities that they need, such as claws, stealth, speed, strength, teeth, you get it, and may transform into other animals if they need to elude pursuit. These witches have other powers as well beyond just shape-shifting. They can hold people in their power by locking eyes with their victims, and then they can force them to do the witch's bidding. They can read minds and can use their magic to cause illness, death, or destroy property. Skinwalkers can control nocturnal creatures, such as owls and wolves, and they can call up the spirits of the dead and even reanimate corpses. Skinwalkers often rap on windows and doors of homes or make scraping noises. In their human form, they have eyes that look like animals, while in animal form, their eyes kind of look human. And they walk among the people by day, but transform at night. People who have seen skinwalkers say they look both human and animal-like at the same time. And fear of them led to the Navajo Witch Purge of 1878, in which 40 suspected witches were killed. It's important to know that the Ute are not Navajo. They speak a Uto-Aztecan language, they have their own ceremonial calendar, and their own spiritual vocabulary. But in the late 1700s and 1800s, as horses and colonial trade began to rewire the Southwest, Ute and Navajo worlds basically smashed against each other in this perpetual cycle, this car crash of violence and witchcraft that just kept going and going and going. Once the Ute got horses, their range and their power absolutely exploded. The National Park Service's work on the old Spanish Trail notes that by the late 1700s, Ute raiders had become key suppliers in a brutal slave economy, and they captured mostly southern Paiute women and children, and then traded them to New Mexican buyers in exchange for horses and other manufactured goods. Spanish and later Mexican records showed that Ute captives flowing in the other direction was also a thing that was going on. It was a predatory frontier, you could say, where Indian on Indian raiding for slaves became a survival strategy in a colonial system that rewarded those who fed it greatly. Navajo groups were pulled into the same vortex. Historian Sandra Jones, who has written on both Ute history and the Indian slave trade, put it bluntly in an interview. She said, well, the Navajo in this period were more aggressive people. They took slaves. They had Ute slaves. And there was direct conflict as Navajo bands pushed north towards what is now southwestern Colorado and into Ute territory. Ute leader Wakara built his power partly on horse and human trade, threatening to kill or sell captives to New Mexicans or Navajos if Mormon settlers didn't deal with him, as a matter of fact. So before you ever even get to a curse, you've got a frontier where Ute and Navajo are both predators and prey, and a Spanish-Mexican slave economy that rewards the most ruthless. And that matters spiritually. In both traditions, extreme cruelty, betrayal of kin, and the mistreatment of the vulnerable aren't just unfortunate events, if you will. They're the kind of acts that attract, they feed, and they generate malign spiritual forces. Then the United States marches in and turns the dial from violent to outright apocalyptic, as it usually does. In the 1860s, the U.S. Army under General James Henry Carleton decided that the way to pacify the Navajo is to burn their entire world down. He orders Kit Carson to conduct a scorched earth campaign, which ended up destroying crops, killing all the sheep, burning hogans. So thoroughly did he scorch this earth that the Navajo would have no choice but to surrender. Carson's campaign is not just bluecoats and Anglos either. He uses indigenous scouts who know the land, including, guess who, the Utes. In one account of the campaign, Carson's Ute scouts on the way to Fort Defiance, they kill a Navajo man, they steal his sheep, and they send separate scout parties to maraud through Navajo country, capturing Navajo women and children as essentially war booty. It's not hard to imagine how that looks from the Navajo side. You've got your neighboring tribes, once rivals but still people, now acting as literal hunting dogs and mercenaries and marauding rogues for the U.S. Army. So out of that scorched earth comes the Long Walk, which you may have heard of. Between 1863 and 1866, the U.S. essentially forced more than 10,000 Navajo men, women, and children to march hundreds of miles to a new reservation. Survivors remembered that soldiers driving them at gunpoint would simply shoot the stragglers, regardless of age or health, and they would just watch loved ones die of exhaustion, starvation, exposure, and pretty much all the cruelties of life that you can even imagine. Modern estimates now suggest that anywhere between 2,500 and 3,500 Navajo died during the marches and internment. Anthropologists who have worked with Navajo communities say the collective trauma of the Long Walk has become central to Navajo identity. The crime that should haunt America, as one historian put it. They had taken a fully inhabited sacred landscape, scorched it, driven its people across it in chains, and then turned sections of it into what is essentially a death road. Not all Navajo were captured, though. Some escaped. Some fought, some watched while neighboring tribes helped the Americans totally destroy their people. The Ute, who had been raiding and enslaving other native people long before this, now appear as allies of Carleton and Carson at key moments. So just imagine the stories that would spring up from that. Those people helped march us to the place of suffering, and they profited. That's what the Navajo thought of that whole situation. That kind of betrayal is exactly the scenario in which, in Navajo oral tradition, the witchery way is unleashed. And if you remember from a few minutes ago, the witchery way is essentially the way of the Navajo witches, i.e. the skinwalkers. So that's the background behind the whole cursed story that you see floating around in Skinwalker Ranch lore.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores. Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Ute elders telling later investigators that the Navajo, enraged by Ute participation in their enslavement, murder, and destruction, and in the Long Walk, well, these Navajos who followed the witchery way sent skinwalkers into Ute territory as a form of vengeance. And this is no normal vengeance. These aren't your typical special forces type Navajo guys heading into the Ute to exact revenge for their dead family members. These are spiritual beings who now walk the plains basically perpetually. And they're essentially a form of spiritual terrorism. And it was very effective. Legends of America summarizes Ute belief this way. The Ute say the presence of skinwalkers in the Uintah Basin goes back at least 15 generations. The witches themselves, they don't live on the Skinwalker Ranch. They're actually said to hide in nearby Dark Canyon, using the ranch corridor as a highway. But by the 20th century, whatever specific ritual may or may not have been performed, Ute people living around the Uintah Basin had a settled, practical attitude toward that strip of land. Articles and interviews with locals cite Ute elders who flatly state that the ranch sits on the path of the skinwalker. It's a route that these beings use when moving through the basin. The ranch, in their telling, is not so much the nest, as it is a dangerous shoulder of a much bigger road that runs up into the Uintah Mountains toward places like Dark Canyon, which is an actual real location that you can find on maps if you know where to look. So when you hear that modern Anglos start calling it Skinwalker Ranch in the 90s, that's not the origin of the idea. They didn't come up with that. It's the commodified echo of what the Utes have been saying for hundreds of years. Now, long before the reservation line is drawn, Spaniards are already cutting across this country. The old Spanish Trail, which was active from the 1820s through the 1840s, runs just south of the Uintah Basin, and it connects Santa Fe to Los Angeles. It's not a single road, it's more like a web of pack routes, and Ute, Paiute, Navajo, and others act as guides and raiders all along it. Children and women are captured, moved, lost, sold. Even here, you find seed phrases in the historical record that sound eerily like later UFO and ghost lights. You've got Franciscan missionaries and traders writing about balls of fire or strange lights moving over distant mesas and at night, and they interpreted it as omens or divine signs, but described very matter-of-factly, they're luminous spheres rising and descending, sometimes silently, sometimes accompanied by odd sounds. They're not talking about Skinwalker Ranch by name, but they are talking about the same eerie sky over that same general region. And as Mormon colonization ramps up in the 1870s and 1880s, forts, missions, small farms, you start getting the next layer. And these are the men who ride into the Uintah Basin with Bibles and plows and report back on the queer happenings, as they call them, of Indian country. Their letters and diaries tend to use religious language like Satan is strong here, or the spirits of the Lamanites wander, or uncanny noises in the night. They don't really know anything about UFOs, as we call them now. They think in terms of angels, devils, and signs. Still very much that old world type language, which maybe we should have never gotten away from in the first place, if you ask me. By the early 20th century, one of those settler families ends up with what will become the ranch. The Skinwalker Ranch. And this family is the Myers family, Kenneth and Edith. They had no children, and they buy the core property in the 1930s. They are, of course, Latter-day Saints. They are Mormons. They are ordinary ranch folk by any outside measure, except for the fact that they're fucking Mormons. And for roughly six decades, they run cattle there. They make minor improvements. They do whatever Mormons do in their spare time. And on the official surface, nothing happens. They don't go to newspapers. They don't usually call priests or shamans. There are reports that they occasionally notified police of certain weird things happening, but it's kind of unclear whether or not the police in the later days just wanted to sort of have a piece of the story once it started to become popular. But anyway, that's why skeptics like to say, if this place is so wild, then how did the Myers live there from the 30s to the 90s without a single problem? Well, little did the Myers know that the Mormons would come again for this land in another 100 years or so. It appears that the Church of Latter-day Saints has a very deep interest in this specific location throughout time, so who knows what the Myers' real purpose was on the ranch in the first place, but it was kind of suspicious. And when the next owners, the Shermans, move in during the 90s, they're shocked at the way the house is built. There are deadbolts on both the outside and inside doors, as if the previous owners, the Myers, wanted to be able to lock something out and lock something in. Some interior rooms have locks on the inside and outside as well. Even the kitchen cabinets have latches that you really wouldn't bother with unless you were deeply concerned about something or someone getting in them uninvited. And I don't think it was just rats, but I could be wrong. Along the house's exterior walls, there were heavy iron stakes that were sunk deep into the ground with thick chains attached to them at both the front and the back doors. And they look like the type of places that you would tie very large guard dogs constantly, so that anything approaching the entrance has to kind of get past those dogs first. That's really not standard practice on most little cattle spreads. Then there's that story from the late 1940s. During a brutal winter, with all the roads essentially snowed in, Kenneth Myers opens his door to a very tall man, and he's in a long dark coat. His face is indistinct in the storm, and he's claiming to be from the sheriff's office, just checking on them. Myers, who of course knows the local lawmen personally, has never seen this man in his life. The stranger stays just long enough to look around, he doesn't say very much, and then he trudges off into the storm toward the tree line, and nobody ever sees him again, or so they say. And the sheriff's office has no record of sending anyone out in that weather either, of course. It's kind of a small, lonely anecdote. There's no glowing orb, no mutilated cow, no sweating skin, but it does have the feel of something testing the perimeter, right? A presence that knows how to borrow a human face and a plausible excuse in order to get a feel for who's living on its ground now. And I'm gonna go ahead and say it. I personally believe that this is either a skinwalker itself in the flesh, or it is some kind of guardian over this area, caretaker of this land type being, some type of supernatural being, and I do think it returns again later on in the story, and I'll let you know when that return comes to place. I think we can also assume that the locks and chains could be explained away as simple paranoia, but it's more like people do that type of stuff when there's something going on that they don't expect. People lived there for decades, and those people who lived there for decades learned, quietly, without ever calling it paranormal, that this house and this property and this place was different. So they learned that they wanted more than just a latch between them and the dark sometimes, that you wanted big dogs chained by the doors. And from the 1950s onward, ordinary people in the towns of Roosevelt and Fort Duchesne and around the reservation begin reporting strange things in the sky. There's a Roosevelt High School teacher named Junior Hicks who started informally collecting these stories. Being the badass that he is, he said, okay, there's all these stories. I'm going to start recording them all for prosperity and investigation. So kids start bringing him drawings, parents are confessing sightings at PTA meetings, and deputies share their on and off duty, you'll think I'm crazy but type stories. And over the decades, Hicks builds what becomes one of the densest files of UFO reports in rural America, literally hundreds of cases. There's silver discs pacing cars along highways. There's brilliant silent lights dropping beams down into fields. There's dark triangles passing over at low altitudes, so big that they blot out large segments of the sky and the stars. There's multicolored spheres that split and rejoin. There's objects that hover above the tree line and then shoot off at impossible angles. There's weird cattle mutilations. There's bizarre shadowy figures. Pretty much everything you can imagine, and everything pretty much that the government is now just telling us is our drones, okay? And there's this one particular story in the late 1960s. It was early evening, again, winter. And a local couple is, in this story, driving a two-lane road outside Roosevelt. And they're headed back from visiting family. The Uintah Basin has that particular winter look. Snow along the shoulders, blacktop through the landscape, the bright stars overhead. And these aren't tourists. They know every curve and fence post on this stretch. The communities in these times in this area were very tight. The husband is at the wheel, and he notices a light in his side mirror, and it's too bright and too low to be a normal car behind them, he thinks. At first, he thinks it's probably maybe a truck cresting a rise with its brights on, but the light doesn't bob the way that headlights do over uneven ground. It glides. Within a minute, both of them realize that this thing is not on the road at all. Off to the right, pacing them over open fields, is a perfectly defined metallic looking disc, and it's no larger than a small house, which is pretty dang big if you ask me, but it's close enough that they can see shape, not just glare, and it has a dull gunmetal sheen with a brighter band around the middle that seems to pulse very faintly, like a slow heartbeat, and there's no sound, there's no wings, there's no exhaust, and so they speed up. And of course, it speeds up too. They slow down, it drifts back as if it's kind of deliberately keeping a fixed diagonal distance from the car. And at one point, the husband eases off the gas almost to a crawl, and the disc actually then begins to edge closer to them, tightening the angle and never crossing directly in front of them, but staying in their peripheral vision, close enough to make it clear that this is not a coincidence. The wife, who by then is half turned in her seat, kind of watching it too, later tells Hicks that the atmosphere in the car felt thick, like static before a thunderstorm. There's an electricity in the air, except there were no storms anywhere on the horizon. It was a clear night. They could see the stars. And the radio begins to spit a burst of noises and then dies completely. The engine, though, keeps right on running. And that's why you want to get these old cars, not these new cars now that are filled with electrical components, because anybody and anything can just hack those things and turn them off. But if you have these old cars, like with a 350 or something, that puppy will keep running. But anyway, this goes on for miles, and every time the road curves, the disc adjusts its course with it. Anyway, this goes on for miles, and every time the road curves, the disc seems to adjust its course with it, always attempting to stay off to the right, out over the fields. And at one point, they pass a farmhouse with its porch light on, and then the disc dims, as if not really wanting to draw attention. Then it brightens again once they are back in open country. And that detail is the one that bothers the wife the most, as if this whole thing isn't absolutely horrifying. It isn't just moving, it's modulating itself, as if gauging who can see it. So when the couple finally reaches the outskirts of town, more houses, a gas station, you know, the illumination from the town, the disc abruptly peels away. There's no great exit, it simply climbs, tilts slightly, and within a few seconds it's nothing more than a bright point sliding horizontally and then vanishing on the horizon. And they coast into a gas station lot and they kind of sit in the idling car and they're all upset about it, they're shaken about it because they don't feel like they were directly threatened, but they do feel like they've just spent essentially half an hour being escorted by something that clearly knew they were there and matched them like a shadow and was literally observing them. And when Hicks interviewed them, what struck him the most is how consistent their details were. They are embarrassed about the whole thing. They're not excited. They're not eagerly telling the story like they're hoping to get something out of it. They're shy and embarrassed, and they keep insisting that they're not UFO people. And the husband is honestly more rattled by the fact that the disc seemed to react to their speed than by its appearance. He said, if it had just crossed the road and gone on, I'd call it a strange aircraft, but it stayed with us. It chose to stay with us. There's another crazy story. One of the early cattle-like correlations in the basin, and this is decades before the Shermans arrive. It's in the mid-1970s. A rancher whose land sits between the reservation and the low ridges to the north has been hearing stories from neighbors for years, he said. But these stories typically were about odd lights, humming noises, animals, skittish for no reason. He also lost a cow or two to what he always just assumed were predators or the usual bad luck. Cattle farming, ranching was a really big thing and still is in Utah at this time and Nevada and that whole area. And so he doesn't by temperament lean toward the paranormal, but one summer night, he and his teenage son are out late, and they're repairing a section of fence that a windstorm had knocked down. And they finish near midnight. The boy is rolling up leftover wire when he all of a sudden stops and he points. And above a distant pasture, maybe half a mile away, they say, there's a column of light that is connecting the sky to the ground. And it's not lightning. Lightning is instantaneous and ragged, right? We know the difference between a flashlight beam and a lightning strike. This thing is steady. It's a tight shaft of light, maybe 10 or 15 yards across, extending down from some unseen source above the visible darkness. And the only way they register its height is by how it stops short of the stars. It's a bright rod of pale yellow white that just kind of ends. And the rancher, thinking maybe someone has a powerful spotlight or there's some kind of survey crew, kills his truck headlights that he's got on while they're working on the fence. And then suddenly the world goes dark around them. But that column of light remains weirdly self-contained. And there's no halo, there's no gradual fade. It's like a literal hole punched through the night with light pouring down it.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
For several minutes, nothing happens. The son says later that the air felt charged, like the silence before a stampede, he said. The cattle in the field, normally scattered, are huddled near the far end, away from the beam. They're kind of bunched in a tight cluster. It's the same type of feeling that was reported in the car in the other story. Then, as both of them watch, a shape begins to descend inside the beam of light. It is not clearly defined, more like something darker than the light moving down through it. And they can't really make out edges, just the vague impression of bulk lowering toward the ground. The boy, of course, wants to go drive closer, but his dad, whose instincts have been sharpened, you could say, by years of living out there, says that no way, we're close enough. And so they just sit there and watch. And this thing, whatever it is, reaches ground level, and the cattle don't run. One or two of them kind of shift around, but the herd doesn't really break. And there's no noise carried on the air. There's no wind. It's just that sort of like cartoon UFO beam with something working at the bottom of it in total silence. And after what might be 2 minutes or 20, they're not really sure, the beam snaps off suddenly. Not a slow dimming, a cut. It's just completely gone. One moment it's there, the next the field is just black. And the stars behind where the beam had been now look almost too bright, as if somebody turned the background back on. And the father and the son, they sit there waiting for something, literally anything to happen, an explosion, a sound, a wave of cattle, but nothing happens. And eventually they did just drive home. Then in the morning, they go out to check that field and see what the heck was going on. And near the place where they estimated the beam to have been, he finds one of his cows dead, and it's on its side with its eyes wide open. There's no gore, there's no evidence of struggle. Buzzards haven't even found it yet, so he's seeing it fresh. But an ear has been removed in perfect, almost surgical, in a surgical cut kind of way. The flesh isn't torn, it's not ragged, it looks seared as if by a laser. And there's this circular area on the jaw where the hide and the tissue are just completely gone, and it exposes the bone with a very sharp sort of cauterized outline. And there's very little blood on the ground, far less than you'd expect from an animal that size. The rectal area also has a cylindrical section of tissue missing deep into the body cavity. It's an absence more than a wound. okay? And the rancher has dressed enough animals to know what normal butchery, normal predation, and normal disease looks like, and he says it was none of those. The hair around the incisions was unburned, but the edges of the cuts were, they looked like they were cooked. He said there's no tracks, there's no tire marks, there's no boot prints, no cat or coyote prints near the body. 20 years later, when he told this to Hicks, he was allegedly still visibly bothered, not by the dead cow, but by the way that everything played out. The beam, the descending dark shape, the animal dead under conditions that look more like a clinical harvest than a kill. And honestly, who wouldn't be? But this is where really the whole cow in the UFO beam sort of comical image starts to manifest itself in our imaginations and in our entertainment and in our memes and all that kind of stuff. I've got another story I want to tell you here, and I'm just including these stories so that you have some of the more UFO type stories as well. I think it's important to get a full picture. So we told you about the background, told you about the legends, the Native American lore, the Mormon stuff, all that kind of stuff. But I also want you guys to see some of this more, these more technological type anomalies stories as well. And the third one doesn't happen on some lonely dirt road. It happens right over a ton of people. It's the late 1980s. A Friday night in the town of Roosevelt. It's high school football season, and the Basin is one of those places where, like I said, half the population shows up for a home game. So you got the kids, you got the parents, deputies, teachers, the guy from the hardware store, all of them. Those people, the field lights turn the stadium into essentially a bright little island, and everybody is there. And that's important because it's a location with lots of witnesses. You can kind of think about it from the perspective of like that that movie Nope, where it's just like way out there. Everybody kind of knows everybody, okay? And before everybody gets all butthurt about me mentioning Nope, because I know it's a divisive movie, I'm just referencing the vibe, okay? Anyway. At some point in the second half, people begin to notice that the stars over the southern sky are gone. A swath of sky that should be scattered with cold winter stars kind of looks like someone put a lid over it. A sharp-edged triangle of blank blackness, if you will. And it's kind of sliding over the field. And at first, folks think that it's some kind of low cloud, but there's no clouds anywhere else. And this thing moves with a kind of eerie steadiness. And as it glides overhead, some of the players on the field actually stop playing and look up. And there are lights on the underside of this blackness. And three main ones, one at each corner of the triangle. And some say like a dimmer one in the center. But they're not blinking like aircraft strobes. They're just solid, honey-colored type glows. There's no red or green navigation pairs, no roaring engines like before. The thing is silent. If anything, people later say they remember how quiet it was, as if the usual ambient sounds of the night, the crickets, the dogs barking in the distance, the people just chit-chattering had all been kind of dialed down. And this object in the sky is big enough that when it passes directly overhead, it literally fills the whole slice of sky above the football field. And one deputy later tries to estimate its size by comparing its span to landmarks as it moves, and he comes up with something on the order of several football fields long, from tip to tip. Too big to be any conventional plane in local airspace, and it's moving way too slowly to stay aloft by normal aerodynamic means in that era. So it takes maybe a minute, no more, for this triangle to cross from one horizon to the other, and it doesn't wobble, it doesn't bank, there's no speed change. At one point, it does seem to pause, or at least its motion is so smooth that it gives that impression. And then at that point, the central light brightens slightly, according to some people, as if the craft is kind of taking a picture or taking a look. And then it just continues on, eventually slipping past the far light pollution and becoming just another slice of darkness disappearing into the night. So This wasn't a single terrified family or one guy at a windmill reporting this. This is dozens of people, many of whom don't particularly have a reason to share the same story. They might not even share religious or political beliefs, and they've never really talked about UFOs amongst each other together before. And there's everybody from teachers to cops, teenagers, old people, and they all watched the same thing erase the stars over their heads. Hicks spends essentially months after that night taking statements from all these different people. And the differences in their accounts are exactly what you'd expect in a real shared event. Some remember more lights, some fewer, some think it looked more gray than black, some are off by a bit on the direction it came from, but they all kind of converge on one unambiguous fact. It was a huge, silent, triangular something or other that passed low over the town and went on its way as if it had every right to be there. Many of these sightings cluster over this same general region, the river, the ridge, the open grazing land that includes what's now the ranch, and some involve structured craft with windows, other are more like the orbs and balls of fire described in older missionary and indigenous accounts. Families report the power in their houses flickering at the moment, you know, one of these crafts passes overhead. Hunters in the backcountry see lights moving under the canopy or jumping up and down, tracing the course of canyons. But it's not just lights that we're talking about here tonight. In the 1960s and 70s, long before anybody coins the term cattle mutilation for tabloids, there are already ranchers in the basin whispering about odd livestock deaths. Cows found with organs missing and no blood, similar to the other story. Animals with precise circular cuts around an eye. Carcasses that seem to have been dropped from some great height with broken legs and crushed bones, but no real signs of a predator. And locals are generally kind of wary about talking. They don't want to be laughed at. They don't, you know, the community is tight and nobody wants to be the jester within it. But Hicks and a few others are taking notes regardless. All of that means that when the Shermans step on to the property in 1994 for the first time, they're not essentially walking into a blank slate. They are stepping into a basin that has been lit up with high strangeness for decades at this point. A place that, in one investigator's phrase, is already a quote-unquote display. It's a showroom for something that likes to show itself and then pull back. There's something about those 512 acres. And by the time the Shermans buy the ranch, as you can kind of see, all the ingredients are there. You have land that in native cosmology has been cursed and haunted for generations. It's a route where witches and malevolent beings are said to travel, where the soil is loaded and charged with blood and evil, anchored in very real histories of slavery and betrayal. You have a reservation line that turns that haunted corridor into a literal legal border, tribal land on one side, white ranch land on the other, and what you elders call the Path of the Skinwalker becomes, in country records, just another ranch, just another fenced-in parcel. Because that's what we kind of do. We move on to native land, and then we just try to forget everything that ever happened there in the past. But you have decades of basin-wide UFO and light phenomena. You have the cattle deaths, the mysterious strangers, unexplained sky objects, and they're all cataloged by Hicks and not really taken seriously by bureaucrats at all. You have a long-term ranch family who respond to the place not by going public, but by essentially sandbagging their house, bolts, chains, big dogs, and getting on with life generally as best as they can. And all of that is the garden soil, if you will, into which the 1990s eruption, the explosion of popularity, will grow out of. Because when the Shermans arrive, it doesn't seem like what happens next is random. The ranch is once again visited by a mysterious visitor, a strange entity. And it is this wolf that won't die, similar to the original visitor that visited the Myers. I think this is a skinwalker. As a matter of fact, I think this is the same entity. I think it is the same being. Just, and I don't really have any way to prove why that would be or anything like that. It's just a gut feeling. Sometimes people hate when I actually give opinions on this show, believe it or not. But it's like, I just think that it's an interesting coincidence. But the Shermans also experienced the mutilated cattle, the orbs, the voices outside their windows, and they say portals. So in 94, when Terry and Gwen Sherman buy the property from the Myers heirs, which are really just their family members because the Myers didn't have any kids and their family members didn't want this land, so they just sold it out from under them after Mr. Myers died and Mrs. Myers was like in a nursing home and all that kind of stuff. They begin doing what ranchers in the area do. They work hard, they move in their cattle, and they start making plans for the ranch. They've got children, they've got, you know, prize breeding stock, and kind of a vision of turning that ranch into a high-end operation for purebred registered cattle. They don't really have a reason to believe that this is going to be some kind of money-making machine for them in the entertainment industry. This is not your typical flaky family who's just trying to take advantage of the Conjuring house. Terry's background in ranching, combined with Gwen's practicality and the kids' involvement, all of it kind of reads like a brochure for the 4-H club or like Western self-reliance, okay? There's no evidence that they were Mormon either, by the way. Just want to throw that out there because I did inquire. And they walk the property with the realtor and they see real potential. They see decent pasture, a good water source, existing structures that they can upgrade. And what they don't see, because they don't know how to look, is how unnatural some of those structures are. Multiple deadbolts on interior doors, heavy chains anchored by the front and back steps, windows that look like they've been reinforced against something other than the weather. And they move in. They bring their animals, they bring all their stuff, and they begin to make this home. From the land's point of view, if you accept that the land has an actual point of view, you've just kind of swapped out a pair of quiet, stubborn Mormon hermits who were both dead when the property was sold. They literally held it till they died, who tolerated and contained things for 50 years. They've been kind of swapped out for a fresh, hopeful young family that thinks it's here that they want to build something new. And I think that's when the mask comes off, and that's when the stranger, the wolf, introduces himself. Almost immediately, our mysterious stranger from the past makes himself seen, but this time he's walking in a different skin. Within days of moving in, the family is out here near a corral. And they said it's raining lightly. They're checking on the cattle. And out across the field, they see a gray shape coming toward them at a kind of calm, steady lope. At first, they think this is just a big dog. But as it gets closer, they realize this is a wolf. And not just any wolf. This thing is huge. They said horse shoulder high, with a massive head and thick fur that looks strangely matted, almost like it's been wet for a really long time. They said its eyes are steady, intelligent, and it's not afraid. Instead of flanking, kind of testing wind like any normal predator would, it walks right up to the family at the fence.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. Yet you still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is, managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all of your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the smart savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved them more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
Now, that alone should set off alarms for anyone who knows Western wolves. Just reading it set off red flags in my mind. It's a wild wolf that is comfortable with people. And that doesn't seem right, but this one stands there and lets them scratch its flank and pet it like a giant tame dog. And they said it smelt off musky, like wet fur, something older, a little bit rotten, but it's calm. And so for some reason, the Sherman parents, as incompetent and dumb as they are, they let their kids get closer. And this feels like some kind of absurd fairy tale moment, but it could just be a story of bad parenting. And then, without warning, it whirls and lunges through the fence bars, and its jaws lock around the muzzle of a calf. And it seems to, it starts tugging on the calf's face, trying to drag it through the rails. And the calf is screaming, and the entire scene kind of flips from some kind of storybook fairy tale to nightmare in seconds. And Terry and his father beat at the wolf's head and ribs with tools, and it doesn't seem to flinch. It doesn't seem to feel it. It just keeps grinding its teeth. And so Terry runs for his .357 revolver. He comes back and fires point blank into the animal's side. But instead of jumping or dying, as you would expect from a normal wolf, it just glances at him. So Terry just keeps firing. And the family hears the thuds of bullets hitting the flesh. But the wolf doesn't bleed. It doesn't stagger. It just eventually relaxes its grip on the calf and stares back at him. So now, as you can imagine, the mood changes because the thing isn't just attacking livestock. It's demonstrating an immunity to technology and firearms as well. And they're all scared, as you would be too. And somehow in this time frame, they're able to get their hands on a rifle, and they shoot this wolf in the chest with the rifle. And this time there's an actual reaction. The wolf doesn't collapse, though. There's no howling or anything like that. But the wolf seems annoyed and steps back, and then it turns and it calmly just lopes away. The same way that it approached them, it unapproaches them. Now, they track this thing into the fresh mud and snow, and the paw prints are deeply impressed. They're consistent with a very heavy animal. He follows them through a field until abruptly the paw prints stop. And there's no reason for them to stop. There's no brush to hide them. There's no culvert. There's no change in ground that would swallow the tracks up. It's just one step and then nothing, as if the creature stepped through an invisible door. And back near the fence, he finds a small chunk of flesh that the gun had shot off, and it's about the size of a fist. And when they pick it up, The smell that comes off of it is not like blood or fresh meat. It's rotten. It smells rotten and disgusting, like something that has been dead for a while. And the tissue itself also looks degraded too, not like the immediate wet wound that you would expect. Okay, so from a normal ranching perspective, all of this sounds impossible. And I will admit, reading this story, I was both confused and even more confused. I was just kind of like, "What? How is this even possible?" And people think that about other people's sightings all the time. And that's what you have to keep present in your mind. And that's why people who have never had sightings or people who don't believe in sightings can really relate to these types of stories. Because if you haven't been through something bizarre like this yourself, it's really hard for you to believe in those types of things. And so I've had a number of weird sightings that I can't explain, which makes me a little bit more... I'll give it the benefit of the doubt a little bit. I'm kind of confused about the timeline, about the rifles and the guns being used and how many guns are being used and why you would, as a parent, let your kid pet a wolf and all that kind of stuff, especially one that's the biggest wolf you've ever seen. And so there are some blatant timeline and just character abnormalities to me, but I'm not necessarily saying that this didn't happen. And if it did happen, I do believe that this thing was not a normal wolf and that this may have been the same visitor that appeared to the Myers. Again, just wearing a different costume. And from a Navajo or a Ute skinwalker perspective, this is kind of textbook encounter. It's a being, an animal form that can take bullets, it can vanish mid-stride and leave behind something that smells like the grave. This is exactly what the elders warn about when they talk about these things, about these witches who wear skins, who follow the witchery way, these Navajo skinwalkers. Anyway, what happens next is not one big Hollywood scene, but it's kind of a slow, relentless escalation that takes nearly every single category of weirdness that could ever happen in the Uintah Basin, and it plugs it directly into their everyday life, because they start seeing all these creatures that they say don't belong there, like a massive hyena type thing with this thick arched back, and it walked all wrong and it attacks a horse and then it vanishes. They've got these strange bright colored birds that look tropical, even though they're not in a tropical climate or season, and they acknowledge, they're like, we don't know where these weird birds are coming from. They've got these hulking, man-shaped shadows that are like in the trees that seem to watch at the edge of lantern light, and then they disappear. And of course, their cattle start dying in abnormal ways, and one cow is found with a neat circular hole around an eye with the flesh removed, like we talked about before. Another is discovered with all of its internal organs missing, and there's no blood on the ground or anything. And there's kind of this like chemical, this hospital smell kind of lingering around the carcass. But one of the most bizarre stories does involve basically teleporting cattle. The story goes that the Sherman's prize bulls vanished completely from the corral that they had left them in. And so Mr. Sherman, he's walking around the corral, he's looking at the ground, he's trying to figure out how these things got out. Maybe there's any sort of trail or tracks that would give him a clue or anything. Because, I mean, they're big bulls. So you'd think you'd be able to track them pretty easily, and there's nothing. And the metal pipe fence that was all around them and everything, it's still intact. So it appears that something would have had to literally let them out and then close the gate behind them, or just pick them up and carry them off. And I think that is the consensus they came to, because the gates were all closed. Everything looked ordinary inside. There was no sign of a stampede. And it's as if someone basically just erased the bulls completely, like if they were in a computer game and you just like hit delete and they were gone. So he ends up kind of like walking around the farm a little bit, and he's looking toward this old white gooseneck trailer that he's got parked up against the corral fence. And he said it hasn't been used in years, and the only door from the corral side is wired shut, and it hasn't even been opened in so long that allegedly there's like cobwebs hanging across the inside of this corral door. So in other words, there's no way that this door could have been opened without disturbing the spider webs, right? And the windows are all small and they're dusty. And Terry walks past and he looks through this little gap in the side of the trailer, and he sees all four bulls standing inside the trailer, and they're not panicking. They're not even moving. They're just in there like toy bulls packed in shoulder to shoulder, like black statues, and they're facing all in one direction with their heads low and their eyes dull. And as he says, it looks like they were frozen, like they were in a trance-like state. And listen, I've had cattle in the past. I've, you know, my dad rented out land or ranchers when we lived in Missouri and all that kind of stuff. I used to throw rocks at them and run away and stuff. And this is kind of physically impossible on its face. Even getting one full-grown bull into that cramped trailer would be an ordeal involving gates and chutes, a lot of yelling. So getting four of them in there, closing the door, rewiring it from the outside, hiring a couple spiders to respin some webs, not leaving any gouges on the metal or tracks in the dirt, that's suspicious. And before you take my tone to say this didn't happen, what I'm actually saying is just if something happened, it was extremely supernatural, extremely paranormal, whichever word you want to use. And so first, Terry started feeling some relief because, yeah, all of his bulls that are a pretty big investment, they're not gone. But at the same time, something is messed up here. And he feels like he kind of like has somebody playing a joke on him. So he shouts for Gwen, and he smacks the side of the metal trailer with his hand as he does so. And all of a sudden, the bulls wake up like somebody just flipped a switch all at once. They seem to have remembered that, holy cow, pardon the pun, we are four massive bulls crammed into a space barely big enough for one. So they explode into this panic and they start kicking and slamming themselves into the walls. They're bellowing, they're throwing their weight around, and in seconds, they completely destroy, allegedly, the interior of the trailer. And a door that was wired shut, it gets kicked completely off its hinges from the inside. And these bulls in berserk mode tumble out into the open, and they just scatter. And the part that people skip over is that it literally takes Terry and Gwen hours of real-world cowboy work to essentially calm the bulls down and get them back into the corral. And by the time they succeed, the sun is going down. So they're physically exhausted. They're psychologically rattled. They have no idea what's going on. It's been a frustrating day. All their plans had to be canceled because of this. And they've just watched their worst case financial scenario play out in miniature and then essentially be reversed by something that just feels wrong. Like, it feels like everything that happened was something that should have never happened in the first place because it shouldn't have been possible. They see these silent orange, like cigar-shaped objects hanging over their fields all the time. It looks like the sky is opening, and they're these bright star-sized lights that swell into discs and then collapse back to certain points in the sky. They're kind of described as rectangular windows that are hanging in the air that kind of show a different, darker sky behind them. And one evening, while looking through a rifle scope, Terry watches what looks like an orange hole open in midair. And it's this flat, kind of glowing oval that when he sees it dead on, it resolves into a tunnel, and something black and hulking, he said, crawls out of this orange tunnel thing into the far side, and then it drops to the ground and runs off, and then the oval snaps shut, and the night goes back to normal. So yeah, it's a portal, right? It seems like he saw portals opening and closing, and sometimes even things coming out of those portals. And then closer to the house, they seemingly start to understand why there were so many locks on the cabinets and everything, because they've got poltergeist behavior kicking off. They've got groceries that are being brought home, and they'll set them in one place, like on the counter, and then all of the stuff that they took out of the bags will end up back in the bags on the floor. When somebody leaves the room for a moment, tools are going missing from one end of the property, and they reappear stacked neatly somewhere else. Clothing is kind of laid out in strange patterns, and family members are hearing voices speaking in languages they don't understand outside their windows at night. They say it sounds like two entities quietly talking about them. And of course, they've got orbs. Everybody seems to see orbs out there. They've got these orbs that are playing games with their animals. And they say they're like these little blue-white spheres, the size of softballs, and like baseball softballs, and they move. Like, they're controlled by something with a sense of humor, and they kind of play with the animals and play with them. And one night, three of the family's dogs actually chase one of these orbs out into a field. And then it like leads the dogs across the pasture into a patch of brush. And all of a sudden, there's this big flash of light. And they said they hear the dogs yelp, and then there's nothing. There's silence. And in the morning, because I guess Terry didn't feel like going out there in the middle of the night, there's nothing there but three greasy, blackened patches in the grass. I don't know. It seems like something instantly cooked them and basically taken their bodies. So a lot of weird stuff happens to the Shermans after they get this ranch. And make no mistake, you know, I know some people who have gone out to that area before, and they couldn't get on Skinwalker Ranch because obviously it's like an LDS / military / NASA compound now, but they did get close, and a lot of people see weird stuff even in the adjacent properties. Let's continue here. By 1996, the local newspaper is running a story on the UFO ranch, and this is when everything starts really kicking off. And the article kind of catches the eye of George Knapp, and he's the Las Vegas journalist who's been collecting all these weird government stories for years at this point. But it also catches the eye of another guy. A millionaire named Robert Bigelow. And in my opinion, this is where the story becomes its least realistic. It becomes a just big house of mirrors, if you will. It's just, you can't really... Well, I'll tell you why, okay? Bigelow buys Skinwalker Ranch, and when he does this, the ranch essentially becomes an experiment, okay? And the TV shows start, and Disney gets involved, and history gets involved, or whatever. All of these movie companies get involved. He starts making money on the side from entertainment based on the ranch and all this kind of stuff. The cameras are going up on poles at every corner of the ranch. He's putting sensors everywhere. He's got ex-military security guards and PhD scientists. Then they start like literally sleeping there on the property. They're bringing in all of these tools and Geiger counters and oscilloscopes to place all over the place. And it becomes this sort of like, you know, this millionaire is like, okay, we're going to crack the code. And whatever lives in or on that land seems to understand instantly, because you can't just say that hundreds or thousands of years of corrupted land is just nothing because Robert Bigelow said it wasn't, or said it was, or says it was a certain way. He doesn't get to decide what spirituality is, and yet he tries to. So the things that happened on that land before all of this seem to be distinctly different than what is reported after Bigelow gets the land. And you already know the broad strokes of what happens because there's TV shows. So it seems like the place, the ranch, the spirituality, the curse, whatever you want to call it, is learning how to kind of stay just one step ahead of measurement at every step. And the cameras fail right before something happens. Wires are kind of stripped from the poles. Triangles and orbs appear just outside the angle of view. There's some kind of, you know, like quote-unquote invisible predator that stalks just along the tree line that shows up only through night vision as a, like, blip that you can't really tell what it is. And this is where you need to think outside the box a little bit, because once this is just my opinion, guys. I know a lot of people watch this show religiously, but it's kind of like Oak Island, the way that they just keep you going and going and going. And, oh, we found a coin. So, yep, the Templars were definitely here. And then they dig a little. And then, like, it takes a whole nother season. Oh, we found a stone cross. So, oh, this means that this is happening. It's just like that show plays out in the same way as this Skinwalker Ranch show. And I'm just going to say it, man. I think anything that you see on those shows is absolute trash. I think that stuff is, they wouldn't show you it if it was real or if they believed it was real or anything like that. You got to think about the whole complex. You got to think about the narrative that they weave, the stories that they tell in the history books and the science textbooks, the stuff that they ingrain in children's minds is real when it isn't, the fairy tales. You got to take the whole master plan, the whole picture, and then you got to ask yourself, so why would they all of a sudden provide us with this smoking gun for spirituality or whatever? And the answer is they wouldn't. So you really do got to think outside the box a little bit here and understand that this appears as a double-edged sword, because simultaneously the involvement of a mega millionaire nearly guarantees that something is going on. But you can also most definitely come to the conclusion that now that the mega millionaires are involved, you will never actually know what that thing is. So the millionaire is both the proof and the door slammed shut, if you will. With Bigelow, that's especially true. And I'll tell you why. Bigelow is kind of framed as this sort of provider of a smoking gun. Why? Because of his credentials. He has these deep ties to the government and to space programs. So he must be telling the truth, right? Sure, I guess. In the same way that ancient aliens are telling the truth because they talk about controversial topics. Never mind the fact that they're owned by Disney. Never mind the fact that so are these Skinwalker Ranch shows. Bigelow Aerospace, which is his company, isn't just a UFO hobby shop. It built real actual hardware that NASA paid for and then bolted onto the International Space Station. Like, in 2012, NASA literally awarded Bigelow Aerospace a contract worth about $18 million to build the Bigelow Expandable Activity Model, which was this like inflatable habitat module to test expandable structures on the International Space Station. And he did all sorts of stuff. I'm not going to go down all of the things that he did for NASA and the government, but Bigelow has straight up conventional government ties, NASA contracts, International Space System hardware, public pressers with NASA administrators. He's deeply involved with the government and with the space program. So, you know, one of the biggest conspiracy theories in the world is that the moon landing wasn't real. And even if we did get to the moon, the videos that we were shown, they're impossible to have been real. So you've got to ask yourself, how real anything that they are involved with can possibly be. You've got people here who believe that NASA doesn't even touch outer space, really. They're mainly bottom of the ocean type entities, and they do. They have their little fingers in all sorts of things outside of space, too. It's one of those things, and you've got ATIP involved. You've got the Advanced Aerospace Weapon System Application Program that Bigelow was also involved in. You've got all this kind of stuff. He's got a special Black Projects arm where allegedly he worked to investigate advanced aerospace threats for the government. And all of this, he just chose to start doing on Skinwalker Ranch. So why do you think? Why do you think Skinwalker Ranch was chosen for Bigelow? Why do you think Bigelow chose Skinwalker Ranch? Here's what I think. If you zoom out, you've got the same guy taking NASA money to test inflatable space habitats and DIA money to study non-human intelligence at a cursed ranch in Utah. That's the big picture. And officially, those should be separate lanes. But it also means the government has already, in writing and in budget line items, treated Bigelow as a legitimate partner, both in hardware for their space program and stuff, and for investigations into spiritual matters, alien matters, allegedly whatever's happening around Skinwalker Ranch. So on the surface, it looks exactly like what every serious investigator would want. You got the money, you got the instrumentation, you got the PhDs, you got security, you got military, you got long-term monitoring. Underneath, though, you've handed a living spiritual mystery to two types of entities whose default instincts are both secrecy and narrative control. And so that's why I say these shows, whatever they're showing you, is not real. You've got a billionaire with proprietary interests and a national security apparatus that thinks in terms of threats, weapons, classification, and narrative control. So if the aim is to get the real truth of what the ranch is, that combination doesn't work. It's actually actively distorting. They're not interested in presenting you the truth. The shows, the entertainment, is just a byproduct that gets them some extra money, and they're basically sitting on a theme park that nobody but them can play in, but everybody wants to see from the outside. And Bigelow himself is part of the problem, because he's not just a curious rich guy with a hobby. At the height of all this, he's three people at once. He's a true believer because he does believe in the paranormal.
In fact, you can have, you know, out-of-body experiences induced artificially. And I learned that from the Air Force General.
Oh.
Yeah. By overdoing centrifuge. So you get into G-lock, right, at about 7, 7.5 with no other apparatus, and you're trying to hold your breath and breathe before passing out. So we had videos that he would show, and around 7.2 or 3, boom, their head's nodding, down they go. So his personal experience was that he had an out-of-body experience he couldn't explain. That particular day, he did 12. They now have rules where you can't do more than 3, is what I recall him saying. But he had done 12. He gets out of the capsule, the centrifuge, you know, and he's not in his body anymore. His body is still in the process of getting out and stepping onto the platform. But he's up above his body, and he's watching himself walk down the hallway. He's aware of what's going on in rooms alongside this hallway. He's aware of people. He's hearing conversations and so forth, but he shouldn't be able to hear. He has an awareness that's not a normal human awareness because of this out-of-body experience. That's not because he almost died. This is artificially induced. He goes all the way down to the end of the hallway where his office is, opens the door, and his body opens the door. He goes right through the walls. Okay, he's up in like in the ceiling, you know, and the body opens the door, closes it. The body walks around to his desk, and as soon as the body sat in the chair, he slammed into his body. He came back into his body. His consciousness did.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
But he's also a businessman who's trying to protect intellectual property and government technology, and he's a government contractor who is working under classified advanced aerospace programs. So he's a believer, but not really one that can tell you what he sees. A real believer wants to prove the phenomenon is real and meaningful. A businessman wants to own the data and monetize whatever comes from it. And a defense contractor, he wants to turn whatever is being discovered into understandable threat analysis and advantage for the government, some kind of leverage for the government. And none of those roles require or reward telling the full story to the public, to you and me. So all three, I guess you could say, in different ways, encourage their own selective revelations. And that's, you show just enough to attract talent and funding, and you shape the story, you adjust the narrative so that it justifies more contracts, more prestige, and more control. So that means our picture of Skinwalker Ranch in this era is already completely third hand and not real at all. There are the raw events on the ground, and those events are then interpreted by teams who answer to Bigelow. They're filtered through the government, through the space program, and finally their interpretations are then once again filtered into books and interviews and eventually television years after the fact. And at no point are we actually seeing the thing itself. We are seeing what passes through a human being whose incentives do not align with the radical transparency that we demand. And it's a lot like the Epstein files. Like, they say that there's all these files, they say they're going to release them, and then all of a sudden they're not going to release them, and then all of a sudden they don't exist, and now all of a sudden they're going to release them again, but there's nothing in them, and then they release them, and all of a sudden Trump is having Thanksgiving dinner with Epstein on his first presidential term, and it's just all this kind of stuff. It's like, you get to the point where the Skinwalker Ranch is kind of treated in the same way. You don't know what's real, and so none of it's real. That's just my humble opinion on that whole Bigelow period. But it's also not just the fact that you're getting stuff filtered through so many lenses that by the time you see it, it's a completely different shape and color. They're literally changing the language of it too. So what used to be the language of spirits and curses and predatory intelligence and deeply rooted, vengeful spiritual phenomenon. It becomes unknown energy. It becomes radiation anomalies, aerospace platforms, psychological effects. You know, the UFO talk is amplified so that everything appears like it's coming from outer space. Phenomena that hint at materials, propulsion, weapons, or human effects are kind of foregrounded. And the rest quietly gets treated as just noise and superstition and irrelevant weirdness. What's actually going on, which is this spiritual warfare, turns into this otherworldly intelligence from outer space and all that kind of jazz. You guys know what I'm talking about. I don't need to go down the list of all the terms that they use to try to fit over spirituality. They take the God out of it. They take the evil that is actually there out of it, and they turn it into a science. And I think that is extremely detrimental to mankind. The government is not in the business of satisfying metaphysical curiosity. It is in the business of identifying threats and opportunities. And that mindset warps what is collected, what is allowed to be told, what is dismissed, and how everything is filed away. So if it doesn't fit within these little pockets of what the government calls valuable, it doesn't even get registered, if you will. And personally, I believe that spiritual beings and spiritual entities understand when not to show themselves to technological entities. I think that they understand that the picture of what's going on will be distorted. And I don't think that's necessarily good for all spiritual beings. And so I don't think that they necessarily are going to show themselves to cameras. I don't think they're going to show themselves to all these NASA tools out there. And I don't think that when, you know, the $1 million worth of cameras are rolling, they're just going to prance up from the underbrush and be like, here I am, I'm a skinwalker. That's just not going to happen. And I think that that's one of the reasons that people don't take AI as serious as it really is, the threat of AI and the gods of modern technology, is because traditionally it appears as if technology can't really be anything super dangerous on a spiritual level. But once the demonic forces do begin to infiltrate technology and they begin to use technology as a tool, not to necessarily expose them, but as a tool to infiltrate and use against the people who are trying to expose them, that's when the real problem starts, because you won't be able to differentiate technology from demonic activity. But it's not like every spiritual creature, every cryptid and supernatural entity is just going to be popping out for your cameras. And you can see that obviously. I don't have to explain that really, but that's why I just don't think that anything that they caught is even valuable. And if they did catch anything that is valuable, because once in a while, like when people go ghost hunting or stuff like that, when people, I've rarely ever seen cryptid sightings that are blowing my mind, especially these days. But when people do catch something on camera and they are mega millionaires with all of this technology, they're not going to show it to you. It uproots the narrative. Just like if they actually found a living dinosaur, like a Stegosaurus or a T-Rex, they would never show it to you. It would go against the entire narrative. So there's something there that we need to understand. And that's that these people, even if they had the proof, they wouldn't show you. And if they're not going to show you, they're not going to release it, then that destroys the possibility of independent verification, because nobody can go back to look at the full raw footage. Nobody can build an unbiased sort of statistical picture of how often anomalies occurred versus how often nothing happened. Nobody can test alternative hypotheses by looking at what the investigators themselves decided wasn't worth writing about in the books. Nobody can do any of that. So what we get instead are highlight reels, the most dramatic moments, the most visually attractive events, the best narrative beats. It's exactly the opposite of how good science, especially on spiritual things, works. And yet, the ranch is advertised as the most scientifically studied paranormal hotspot on Earth. But that's just a phrase that is kind of dangled in front of you like bait. The scientific lifeblood is completely sealed off, if you even want to call it that. Because in my opinion, I say scientific lifeblood because they are using science to try to explain it. But it's really, you don't even get to see the proof of the spiritual matters. They're hiding that through their scientific language and their scientific assets. It's just, it's like I said, it's a great big house of mirrors. You don't know where to go. You don't know which way is the right way. You don't know which lead to follow. And so you can't really verify or study anything that the show offers you. You can't really include any of it as evidence because it's all potentially fake, and all of it has been through so many avenues of, scrutinization, I guess is the word I will use, by the government, by Bigelow, by scientists, by Disney and history, and all these channels that have decided, okay, yeah, this is what we'll show them. And as somebody who has worked on these TV shows before, I can tell you, you don't get the story. You just get what they can turn into a TikTok, what they can turn into a short, what they can throw up and get as many views as possible without actually showing you anything. And when Bigelow sells the ranch and the property transitions to Brandon Fugel and a television production machine, a whole new filter is laid on top of all those old ones, because now Skinwalker Ranch isn't just an intelligence problem or a spiritual problem. It's just content. It is sold as a content entity. And for a cable series to survive, it needs a steady drip of mysteries and cliffhangers, not definitive answers. Experiments are designed to look good on camera and then resolve within a single segment, not grind through months of boring controls. The editing compresses time, it heightens the tension intentionally, and it kind of omits this inconclusiveness. And whatever is happening in that airspace and on the ground is now just being cut to fit commercial breaks, basically. So beyond hardware, there's narrative experimentation. By selectively leaking some details, such as the most interesting, the hitchhiker effects, the portal-like phenomena, the precognitive intelligence, all that kind of stuff, while burying others, these institutions can basically observe how different communities interpret and metabolize that information. They can shape public belief, if you will. They can test social reactions. And they can obscure any inconvenient conclusions in this sort of haze of half-truths. And in that environment, even insiders may only see their own little tiny compartment. You know, the medical anomalies in one box, the radar returns in another, the portal pictures in a different one, the personnel reports in this other room at the end of the hall, and none of them are really allowed to compare in notes. So the full picture, if anybody has it, sits in a locked vault somewhere where only the higher-ups can ever even see them, and you and me, we're just simply not invited. So what's the conclusion then? You know, like, at the end of all of this, what is the conclusion? I think that there is something strange and supernatural going on at Skinwalker Ranch that has nothing to do with technology. I think the government realized this, and they found a puppet, a little Pinocchio, if you will, to turn into a side quest that would essentially kill two birds with one stone. Bigelow would murder spirituality, because, first of all, he's a believer, so he will go into it and he will find something. And when he finds it, the government will then subsequently not allow him to reveal it. But he will also provide the government with asset experimentation at the same time, with NASA development at the same time. So that's Bigelow's role in all of this. And he gets to become famous. He gets to have a TV show. And the government gets to control the narrative. And they get a couple new gadgets for the space station as well. The government and NASA can test whatever they want there. And Bigelow can basically spearhead that while making a TV show that shows you almost nothing because A, it's not profitable to, and B, the government won't actually let him show us anything that's actually real. And if it does show us something, don't worry. It comes straight from the same studio that brought you the moon landing that almost nobody believes actually happened as it was presented on film, even if it did happen in real life. So you get Disney, which I know a lot of people are like, it's not Disney, it was history. Well, the same thing. You get them, you get NASA, you get big government, and you get millionaires. And with that, you can pretty much guarantee the end of the real era of truth coming out of Skinwalker Ranch. And if you're still watching this, get ready for it to get even murkier. Because Bigelow no longer owns the ranch, allegedly. Now it is owned by a man named Brandon Fugel with his company that is known as Adamantium. And that is a suspicious name, if you ask me. And I was going to make one big mega episode, but now I realize that there's going to be no way I could do this entire video without it being almost 3 hours long. So I'm going to cut this short at an hour and a half. Short and long at the same time. And if you guys are interested in what the Church of Latter-day Saints has to do with all of this conspiracy, then you can tune into the next episode that I drop on it, which will probably come next week, because it is bizarre. It is crazy. And it's probably even crazier than the Bigelow conspiracy, if you ask me. I was reading this and I could not believe that the Mormons also had their dirty little fingers in this. And it blew my mind, the conclusions that I came to. And I know that some of you guys were really excited for this connection. So don't worry, it will be coming out. People usually don't watch my videos all the way through because there's a lot to chew on. And I don't want the truth to be lost at the end of a video. So I'm gonna release it in another one next week. I love you guys. Thank you for watching. Tell me what you guys think. Listen to me. You can tell I need another cup of coffee. Tell me what you guys think is going on in the comments, because I am interested in what you guys think is happening in Skinwalker Ranch. I do think it is one of the most heavily scrutinized, but also one of the most mysterious locations in the USA. So give me a shout. Let's see what we got. And remember, the life is in the blood.
You really want to be better with your finances. You try to put money away in savings. You look for deals. You wrote out a budget once a long time ago. You still overdraft from time to time and you still have debt. The truth is managing money is not easy, but Rocket Money can help. Rocket Money shows you exactly what you're spending every month. From there, the app helps you make a budget that meets your financial goals. The app even gives you real-time alerts when you're about to go over your budget so you don't spend too much. With Rocket Money, you can also see all your subscriptions at a glance and cancel the ones you don't want right from the app. Rocket Money can even try to get you a refund for some of the money you wasted. Plus, you can use the Smart Savings feature to start putting more money away. Rocket Money analyzes your accounts to determine the optimal time to stow away cash without going over your budget. Our members report that the Rocket Money app saved more than $700 a year. Getting better with money doesn't have to be a pipe dream. Rocket Money can make it a reality. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play stores.
If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with a Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.